All right, here we go on a Friday. It is Cody and Gold. We are back inside air conditioning, which is first and foremost a great thing today. We are not in St. Joe.
I'm not going to complain about that,
no. There is no training camp practice today as the Chiefs get set for their preseason opener tomorrow night out in Arizona. We'll be in St. Joe on Monday and Tuesday, but we're excited to be inside the beautiful sportsbook here at Hollywood Casino throughout the entire day. It is the fan takeover day. We're broadcasting till 2 o'clock. Then we hand things off to the drive. It'll be Jay Binkley, who will probably be here by 11 o'clock, is my guess.
But
Jay
Binkley, yeah. You think he's running late today?
he might already be on the way.
He very well could be. I don't want to say for sure, but it could be.
There's a real chance. But it'll be Binkley and Rob from 2 to 6 this afternoon. But you want to stop by the sportsbook here for a couple reasons. Number one, we are registering you to win a signed Charles Omenihu football plus a pair of Chiefs and Colts tickets. Awesome opportunity for you to get to a Chiefs game this year. Plus, Hollywood Casino is giving away $100 in pin cash every hour from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Obviously, hopefully you already like their Instagram, Facebook, and social media pages as well, but you can come on by and hang out. And look, we've got I don't know, what is it? What'd you say? It looks like 50 TVs to me. I got to get the exact number. It looks like 50 TVs in front of us. It's been a bit since I broadcasted from inside the book. We were out here a couple times in the spring. Obviously, football season is basically here. This place is going to be packed on Saturdays for college football, on Sundays for the NFL season as well. So appreciate those of you that have already registered and hope to see you guys out here throughout the day as well. You can hit us up on the Jay's Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965.
Like he said, you can register while you're out here, and they're just going to do it. Top of the hour, make it easy. They'll refresh the list. Every hour, give you a chance to win that $100 in pen cash. You can go, you know, do with it what you will when you're here. Plus, a chance, obviously, to meet the Alex Gold. Maybe you're single. Maybe you're a single girl in your early
30s. Yes, the Hollywood Casino where relationships begin.
It could.
Yes.
You never know, man. People have certainly met at lots of different places, and this could be one of those. So, yeah, like Alex said, come out and meet us here at Hollywood Casino. We'll be broadcasting live until 2, and then obviously to drive until 6. With all those chances to win those great prizes. Obviously, with the Royals and the way that this series starts, it feels like a similar story, but with the time ticking away, I think we have to realize where the Royals are and what their record will have to be. 27-20 is what they'd have to go to win 84 wins. I think 86 is probably the minimum, which means what we're talking about is 29-18. Well, if that's not the tallest task. And I'm not sure, other than the one stretch where the Royals won, what, like 15 of 18 or 16 of 18? They have not had a stretch like that at any other point this year, Gold. But these next 9 games against the Twins team, who had an absolute fire sale, the Nationals, who were not a good baseball team, and the White Sox, who were only better than the Colorado Rockies, these next 9 games have a bare minimum number of wins. If the Royals want to tell themselves they're still going to the postseason, not me and you, not the everyday fan, not the odds. You and I looked up the odds for the Royals to win the World Series today because we're like,
wow.
What are the odds for that, right?
Yeah, well, we are at a casino, so we say, hey, what's 150-1 to do that? They're about 7-1 to make the postseason.
Okay, so 7-1 to make the postseason. For that, for the long shot, for all purposes, right, 7-1 to hit, you have to win, I think, at bare minimum, 6 of the next 9 games.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, that's the reality. That's the reality of the situation because of where they've put themselves. Normally, you would say, oh, that's, you know, asking a team to go 6-3 or 7-2 on a 9-game stretch is very difficult to do. But they have to get on a hot streak at some point over these next 50 games, less than 50 now, I guess, if you think they're getting in. And so what is a better time to do that than these opponents that are upcoming? Because, you know, on the other end of that, you still have, I think, 6 against the Tigers at some point before this month is over as well. And we know they still, even though they've cooled off a little bit, they're still the best team in your division, one of the best teams in all of baseball. So, yeah, I think 6-3 minimum is totally correct, Cody. And in order for them to get to that mark, I understand strange things can happen with who you play, but in order to get to that mark, they probably need a sweep of the Twins this weekend.
Counting on just winning 2 out of 3 of every series is a real challenge. And the Twins have no one left. No one. And you have Lugo and Noah Cameron, the two guys pitching the best for you in the starting rotation. Burgert is the third guy to go. He obviously had a pretty good start his first time around. They're going to skip through on the Falter in this time because they have the off day and the ability to get him back on regular rest. So if they're going with that rotation, well, then you should be in good shape against the Twins, plus your order, plus the other stuff. I understand. Do I actually expect them to go 6-3? The truth is I don't. I kind of think they'll go like five.
If they sweep the Twins, if they sweep the Twins, it's very realistic. Now, we've seen this game play out so many times, though, where unfortunately we're talking about how the Twins aren't any good and how they've basically packed it in. They traded away all this, and then you watch the Royals are going to lose 2 out of 3 to the Twins. I mean, I'm not hoping that happens. I'm just saying that would be something we've all seen play out so many times in our fandom.
Sure. Fresh bodies, new guys up from the minors, they're all like, ooh, we're big leaguers, and they're excited and full of life. But the Royals have something to play for, you know? Like something.
Yeah, but there's a lot of young players on the there's a lot of young players on the Twins, though, that are trying to earn a spot on that team next year. I mean, yeah. Brooks Lee is a rookie. He didn't get traded. Byron Buxton's the one vet, and he's still banged up, I think, but he's the one vet that's on the team. Otherwise, go look through that potential lineup for the Twins tonight, and how many names have you ever heard of? How many names have Twins fans really become familiar with? They have a bunch of players that are trying to earn a spot on their team next year. So I get what you're saying, that the Royals for this year should be hungry, and they are trying to get in the postseason. But there's a reason still for the Twins to be playing. Some of these guys are trying to make sure they stay in the rotation and the lineup for next year. Not to mention the guy on the mound tonight, Joe Ryan, is still one of the better pitchers in all of baseball.
Yeah, he's very good. So it's going to be a low-scoring affair, although Seth Lugo's been as good as him this year. So it's not like you're without it. Their lineup is, let's see, who do I know? I know Clemens. Does that okay? So I know him.
Is that Roger?
It's his kid. Royce Lewis.
You've heard of Royce Lewis.
I'm familiar with
Brooks
him.
Brooks Lee
and Lee. That's it. That's all I know. I don't know who Gasper or Keck.
The Friendly Ghost.
Or Wald. I don't know who the rest of these guys are, but I do know who the rest of them are. You know, so some of the players look. They're a team that gave away a huge chunk of their talent. They're a team that was going backwards before they gave away a huge chunk of their talent.
No, that's why they did it, yeah.
That's
yeah.
The other part of it. It's like, it's not like that was a hot team who was, or like a team like the Royals, stuck in the middle of the road and then doing it. They were a team who was stuck in the middle of the road like the Royals for a long time, started to stink, so they gave away anybody of value at all. They sent out maybe 10 different like, well, we're sad to see it go, but to your point in baseball, they just won 2 of 3 against the Tigers.
Yep.
After they traded everyone away. And so, like, no, you're not guaranteed any wins in this sport. Realistically, if I thought they were going to, like, if I wanted to really get back on board, they're making the playoffs, I think 7-2 or 8-1. Do I think to stay alive, they got to go 6-3, right? Like, for me to come in here 9 days from now, which would be what? I don't know. A week and a half from now. We're at the end of next week, Gold, and they've won 8 of 9 games. That's the only way I'm going to come on this show and start being ready to be like, boys, they're back. Here come the playoffs. Get ready for October. And, you know, and I like the only way I'm willing to do that is if this team wins 8 of these 9, 7 of these 9. 6-3 is just so I feel like they're not dead. They go 5-4, 4-5, then, yeah, I mean,
they can't just make up one game above 500 throughout 9-game stretches because of the amount of teams that are in front of them, as we discussed yesterday. If they were only chasing one team, you could say, oh, just play every homestand or every 9-game stretch a game or two above 500, and you might catch that team. Not when you're chasing 4 teams.
Yeah.
Not to mention, it's that you're still going to have to do something when you play a team like the Rangers as well, head-to-head, because they're a team that's against you. As much as we talk about the Twins, you could win 2 out of 3 for the Twins, and you may only gain a half game on everybody else. Like, that's the challenge here.
Yeah. I mean, you'll gain, I'd say this, you'll probably gain more than a half game on one of the teams, but you're not just chasing.
Well, look who everybody's playing. Look who's everybody else is playing this weekend in there. If you pull up the weekend series across all of baseball, right? So a team in front of you, let's take a look at the Rangers, for example. The Texas Rangers, who do they have this weekend in their series?
That's a good question. Let me look.
They're playing the Phillies. Very good Phillies team. So that's a team that will have a tough series. The Cleveland Guardians are playing the White Sox this weekend, unfortunately.
They're playing good baseball, too.
The Mariners are hosting the Rays this weekend. That'd be another example.
Weirdly enough, the Guardians are not even the team I'm worried about, because I feel like You got to worry about the Yankees, Mariners, and Red Sox before you get to the others.
And the Yankees are playing the Astros this weekend, so that's a tough series for them. They're worse than the Astros. The Astros are 64-51 on the season.
So at least it's just such a huge opportunity. And I know that their records are very comparable, the Royals and the Twins. I understand that. But they have been a worse team than you a huge chunk of the year. You made improvements to your roster, and they traded your roster away. And I'm not saying that those improvements were only for this year. You and I have talked about this. They're not. Those improvements are not just for the year 2025. They were making moves that gave them a chance in 2025 and give them an even better chance in 2026. But if they want that chance in 2025 to continue living, well, then they have to actually win six of the next nine games against inferior opponents, teams I know you are better than.
Coming up in 20 minutes, Jake Eisenberg, one of the voices of the Royals, will be joining us for his weekly visit. He, of course, is in the Twin Cities as the Royals take on the Twins. You'll hear the game right here on 96.5 The Fan tonight. Reminder, tomorrow the game will be on The Fan AM. That is because we will have Chiefs Cardinals on 96.5 The Fan tomorrow night. So just a heads up about that. We also have Josh Briscoe, one of our Chiefs insiders, joining us at 11. Of course, Josh Briscoe will make his Chiefs Radio Network debut tomorrow night. We'll have to talk to him about that as well. New pre- and post-game host as well. We're excited about that. Let's talk a little Chiefs football, though, right now, because Sam McDowell put out some numbers I thought were kind of interesting about missed opportunities in the red zone.
Yeah, the way it works, and I think that this is probably a good way to look at, like, maybe there's a regression to the mean part that could allow Chiefs fans to feel better about where the Chiefs offense is this year. Last year, and I don't think this is a secret to anyone listening to this show, last year the Chiefs were pretty bad in the red zone, Gold. Who knew? They're one of the worst teams in the league in the red zone. The Chiefs and Sam McDowell put out this stat in an article over at the Kansas City Star, saying if the Chiefs had converted last year's red zone trips into touchdowns at the same rate they did in 2022, in which they were one of the better teams in the league, they would have been the sixth best offense in the NFL in scoring. And what that goes to tell us, Gold, about where they are and what kind of team they are, is that had they simply just been better in red zone in 2025, maybe we wouldn't have felt as destitute about the Chiefs' offense as we did for a huge chunk of last year. And maybe just a simple regression to the mean can get us back into that the Chiefs have the top five offense again. Because we know they have more talent. There's no mystery about that. But they were 21st in red zone scoring touchdown percentage last year. If they had gone at the rate, as Sam had mentioned, in 2022, well, then that's a team that would be a top six offense in the NFL. Now, it just depends on how you want to look at it from that perspective or if that makes you feel better. They were second in the NFL 51% of that year. 54%. We are talking about a 16% increase in that. What's changed, I guess, would be the question. Gold, last year when they couldn't score in the red zone, what did you think the problems were? One was target.
There was a lot of people
to throw to.
There's a lot of penalties on the offensive line.
A lot of penalties on the offensive
line. And inability to protect.
And short yardage, right? Mm-hmm. Their inability to be a short yardage team. Last 2 years ago in 2023, because it's interesting you said 2022. 2023, they were right back where they were last year. 51%. The year before that, in 2021, 62%. This is a variable stat for the Chiefs. They've been top 10 twice and bottom 10 twice in the last 4 years. And it's been every other year. So if this is just an up year, offense fixed. If they are just simply better in the red zone, which goes back to, I guess, the same thing I am. This is where Simmons, and this is where the offensive line play, is not discussed as it relates. We just see it on, like, the Golden's third and six, and he can't get the pass off. It matters far more in the red zone than anything else. The 2 years in which they struggled, they had injuries on the offensive line preventing them from being at their best. 2022, they had a stable offensive line. They had Orlando Brown Jr. and Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith and the other guys, and they were comfortable and happy and consistent across the offensive line in all five spots for a huge chunk of the year. So if Joshua Simmons is the good, I expect them to be there. I actually did the math myself because I was curious. What would they be if they were just last year, the 61% instead of the 2022? And if they were the 61%, they'd be a top 10 offense. Which, I guess, goes back to the question I would ask you. Is that good enough this year? Is the defense good enough this year that the ninth best offense is a Super Bowl?
Absolutely. How can I say no when we saw last year a team still won 15 games with the offense being what it was? Now, it was a very, very good defense. But, yeah, if you tell me there are a top 10 offense and a top 10 defense, meaning, like, literally ninth or 10th, not fifth and third, then yeah, of course that's good enough. Does it mean they're winning 15 games? No. But is that good enough? That would give them actually a better chance to win the Super Bowl than a year ago, even though they're going to win fewer games probably this year. That is a more well-rounded team. You have to have the ability to have the threat and the killer instinct. I don't think the offense has to be fifth best to... I mean, how can I say that after last year?
Do I think they're going to be the sixth best defense is the problem?
Why not?
They were the sixth best defense last year, 20 and a half. I mean, honestly, there should be some regression.
Charles Aminihue is available from week one. He wasn't available week one last year.
For now, he's another player. He lands in the Hollywood camp. I can't just ring in 17 games for him and count it. Like, I'm not saying you have to count on an injury. He's healthy right now.
No, but his time missed in a Kansas City Chiefs uniform, his first year was six games due to a suspension from a prior incident. And then when he missed the beginning of last year, it was because he had an ACL injury in the AFC title game the year before. So yeah. He was playing, you know what I'm saying? Like, I actually don't consider Charles Aminihue injury prone.
Oh, you think he's
He had an ACL injury in an AFC title game.
But I guess he was healthy for those six games that he was suspended, but he was suspended, so, like, does it count?
Right, but we know he doesn't have any legal problems right now. So.
I know, but he's played one complete season since 2022. Like, in, 2021. He played 14 games his rookie year. I don't know if he was hurt. He probably wasn't. 15 games in 2020, 15 games in 2021. That's a healthy player. 2022, he played in 17 games. That's a healthy player. 2023, he played in 11, but that was a suspension. And then last year, he was hurt.
Yeah, I don't consider him an injury-prone player.
It just, yeah, because he played for two different teams, maybe he's not. Maybe he's on that. If he got hurt again this year, then I feel like you would enter that conversation versus Hollywood, who's been hurt a lot in his career. I think we're having a slightly different conversation. So if you're just telling me they're better, I mean, I don't know, no veteran safety. It's pretty much, you know, slightly aging. Chris Jones a year older. I could make a few arguments for why they would be slightly worse. I don't think there's a dramatic drop-off coming that way. Yeah,
but also, like, I don't think Chris Jones is having fewer than the eight sacks or whatever, eight and a half that he had last year.
This is just history. History is on the side of defensive regression. Not the Chiefs, just everyone. Typically, if you're a top 10 defense 3 years in a row, that doesn't maintain forever. You don't, like... You just, as an NFL franchise, maintaining that level of consistency on defense is much harder than on offense. And so I'm not disagreeing with you that that would be the case, but yeah.
I just don't know what changed in the offseason, unless you view Justin Reed as, like, literally the guy that kept it all together. I don't know what changed on the defensive side of the ball.
Other than they got older a year, yeah.
But, like, Chris Jones is not 35 years old.
He's 31? 30?
Not 35. I don't know exactly. I also know
he's not 35.
He's 31. He just turned 31. Yeah.
I mean, that's not nothing. Like, I mean, you know.
No, but again, like, he had 8.5 sacks last year.
Coming,
like,
off
he's not,
the worst.
We think Chris Jones is now going to be a 6-sack guy? No chance. Not yet.
No, I don't think so. I don't think he.
And Charles Aminihue is healthy. George Karlaftis, no reason to believe he's taking a step back.
Was he 8.5? I thought he was 6.5 last year.
Was it all the way down to 6.5?
That's the problem, is that to say, can he be a 6.5 guy? It's like, I feel like he might have been that last year. Like, he might have been 8.5, but I think he's like 6.5. Let's pull up a stat.
5.
Oh, even worse. So can he be a 6.5 guy? I mean, yeah, he was statistically last year. Would I bet on that? No, Gold. I'd probably bet him on the 8 range, right? 8 to 10 to 11 range, if you made me guess what he is. I think they actually should be slightly better on defense, but I can't rule out the regression end. And I just think, most of the time when you're talking about a Super Bowl caliber team, you are top 10 DVOA in both offense and defense, or elite at one. This is what I mean when I say, can you be the ninth best offense? Is that I do not think they will be the league's best defense. I don't think they'll be one of the three best defense in the league where it's like,
well, neither do I.
But no, I know that. But like, I'm not claiming that you do, but like when you get into that range, I don't think you can just be like, the ninth best offense and the fourth best defense. I feel like sometimes it's like just not enough.
Really?
Unless you're when elite Patrick, in one defense. Mahomes maybe
it
is.
I disagree. I mean, I think if anything, we've found out over the last couple of years where Mahomes hasn't played as well in the regular season, he still makes the plays in the postseason.
I mean, they won a Super Bowl when they had the 20th best defense.
I would argue if there's any team that could have the ninth best offense, fourth best defense, or flip it around however you want, it's absolutely the Chiefs. And by the way, I was looking up more. 5 sacks, but he did lead the league in pressures and win rate off of blocks. He was top 5 in football still, Chris Jones.
You and I both said, I thought Chris Jones was still a good player last year, but you just said, can he be a 6.5 sack?
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, he can.
Yeah. I'm stunned that it was 5. I forgot it was 5, didn't you?
Yeah, because he was still a dominant player. I thought it was 6.5, honestly, so I was high, too.
Who was 8? Was it Carl Loftus was 8.5? Maybe that's what who was 8.5.
Carl Loftus was 10.5. I think he was in the double digits.
No, I thought he fell below double digits last year. I think now we got too many numbers flowing through our mind. But I go look it up. I want to say it was Carl Loftus that fell
below. I thought he was like 10.5. He was 8.
Okay.
He was 8. He was 10.5 the year before. Okay. That's why I was thinking
there we go.
So there wasn't anybody who got double-digit sacks then last year for the Chiefs, right?
That's correct.
They were bottom 5 in the NFL or something in team sacks. I mean, that's not surprising.
There was a stretch where Chris Jones was still good, but it was like you didn't hear his name on the broadcast as much for the sake that he was getting double-teamed and triple-teamed and all of that.
Yeah, that was the problem. The issue was not that Chris Jones was bad at football. The issue was that nobody else could get a sack on the damn team.
Yeah.
And so Chris Jones, all of a sudden, you didn't hear his name anymore, and they weren't getting sacks anymore because nobody else was doing the job. It was not Chris Jones' fault. He led the league in double-team rate. They double-teamed him more than any other player in the NFL last year. Good reason. If nobody else was going to get a sack, sure.
I don't think the odds are out for every single player here at Hollywood, for sacks. They don't have, like, Chris Jones and a Minshew and every single player. No book offers it for each defensive player. But what would you take if I told you over under 9.5 sacks for George Karlaftis?
It better be over because they paid him. I think it needs to be
over. That's how it works.
Also, the Karlaftis deal's over 6 years. He doesn't have to suddenly be a 12 sack guy because he got paid yesterday.
Minshew healthy, Jelani Nomor, Norman Love. I think he's got better opportunity this year. I would probably lean under, but I'd be like, that's a good number.
I think Karlaftis, yeah, that's why I say 9.5, I think is probably, I'd take 9, so I'd go under on Karlaftis. If you gave me 9.5 for Chris Jones, I'm taking the over.
I would take the over on Chris Jones, just knowing his history.
Minshew, 6.5 over under.
Over.
I would also take the over. You know, I'm also very bullish on him anyway. I think he might end up having double-digit sacks this season.
I mean, what are you thinking? Everyone's going over?
No, I said under on Karlaftis. I said over on Jones.
And then over on it. I forgot that.
Like, if you're asking for exact sack totals, I think Charles Minshew could have 10 sacks. I think Karlaftis 9. Chris Jones 11.5.
I mean, then you definitely think they're a top 5 defense.
Yeah.
Because that's a team that's near the top of the NFL in sacks. I take the under on a Minshew. He's only had over that number once. So, like, I mean, it's 6.5, and he did it in 2023 as a full-time defensive end for the Chiefs in just 11 games after the suspension, had 7. He was coming off an injury last year, so I don't really care that his sack numbers were low last year. He's been a good sack guy the last 3 years when playing in the NFL. I'd probably still lean under. 6 sack season's a nice NFL season. I wouldn't even be like, honestly, if you told me to lock in 6 sacks for Minshew, I'd probably do it. That's what's messed up about it, is that I'd probably just take it. I'd be like, yeah, sure, 6 sacks, that sounds fine.
Gold, I'm curious. So you said you don't think George has to do it because it's spanned over 6 years. At what point do you need George Karlaftis to get double-digit sacks? Like, is there a point at all?
He's had double-digit sacks. I mean,
from here on out.
If I tell you a player at $23 million a year gets 50 sacks over a 5-year period, I think we would all say it's a huge win.
Yes. So, but that's double digits every year on average.
On average, but that doesn't mean he has to. Yeah, but that's on average.
So he's saying at some point in the thing he needs double digits.
But he can have 1 year where he has 12, and then another year he has 9, and we're good. Like, that's my point. He doesn't have to have 10.5 this year, 12 the next year. Like, it doesn't have to be that.
Well, he's paid in the range of defensive ends, Drew, that get 8 to 12 sacks a year.
Yeah, well, I understand that. I'm just saying, for the reasoning of what we've talked about before, where while Chris Jones is on the roster, you need to take advantage of you having Chris Jones on the roster. You need to put some production forward where when Chris Jones is gone, we don't know if George Karlaftis can do it on his own. He's had Chris.
Well, they will have to have somebody else they draft or develop. Yeah. I mean, no question. I mean, if you're saying 3 years from now, yes. 3 years from now, either Karlaftis has to take the leap to where he is more of a consistent 12-sack guy or something like that, or either Jelani or Norman Lott or a guy we don't even know the name yet is
some
in college right now.
Auburn.
Or playing a senior in high school right now for that matter. I mean, like, truly.
Ask yourself the question of how long you think Chris Jones is playing for the Chiefs, and that'll give you the answer when you need
it. He's 31. I think he's got 3 more years left.
He might see the entire George Karlaftis contract, or at least a good chunk of it. So by the time Karlaftis has to do it on his own, I'm going to need somebody else on the defensive line that isn't George Karlaftis. So, like, I don't know. I guess I'm not worried about it, at least at that point. Maybe it got easier, you know? Slater's out now for the year. Maybe the sacks are going to come a little more healthy and happy in the regular season. Yeah, we don't have to get into that now.
We will in a little bit talk about Rashawn Slater's injury that's going to keep him out for the rest of the season before it really starts for the L.A. Chargers. A huge blow to their chances in the AFC West. I will also talk about some of the other preseason action last night. You had Anthony Richardson getting banged up for the Colts. You had Joe Burrow looking like Joe Burrow. You had their defense looking like their defense. We'll get into all of that. But up next, let's talk a little bit about the Royals with Jake Eisenberg, who will be on the call throughout the weekend up in Minnesota. We'll ask Jake what he expects over the next nine games. Welcome back into Cody and Gold. We are live out at Hollywood Casino. Of course, a chance for you to win some Colts-Chiefs tickets coming out to register for those, plus a signed football from Charles Amenihue. And Hollywood Casino is giving away $100 in pin cash every single hour from 10 to 6. It's the fan takeover day. We're broadcasting till 2. Then we hand things off to Bink and Rob during the drive. And also, don't forget, later on this month, the Red Roundtable we're excited to announce with Mitch Holthus and Danian Hughes. That's Friday, August 29th at 6 o'clock here at Hollywood Casino. It's free, open to the public. You do have to be 21 or older to enter. There'll be a Q&A plus a meet and greet after the roundtable. A really cool event coming up at the end of the month here at Hollywood Casino and with 96.5 The Fan. Let's talk some Royals baseball with Jake Eisenberg. He is in the Twin Cities. He probably has already been to a coffee shop. It is a big start to nine games, though, Jake. We were starting to start the show that it feels like while it's asking for a lot, they're in a position where they need a lot, which is you got to go 7-2 or 6-3. I know the team can't view it in the big picture like that, but for those of us outside, I think it's very fair. What do you make of this stretch coming up?
Yeah, good morning, guys. First, I'll say I'm very proud to share that I've already been to two coffee shops. Part of that is thanks to the off day. We had an off day here yesterday, so you know, I had a little bit more time. But yeah, I'm almost fully caffeinated and definitely ready for this next stretch of games. Alex, I think it's really interesting because you look at the teams that the Royals played coming out of the All-Star break, and you got the two hottest teams in the American League in the first place, Blue Jays and the Red Sox, that have had the best record in baseball pretty much since they traded away Rafael Devers. You know, as bizarre as that was, like, they have really catapulted themselves into very serious, not just playoff contention, but division contention. And you go 3-3 against those teams on the road. You know, 3-3 on its face might say, okay, that's 500, but 3-3 against those teams on the road, that's pretty darn solid. And now you get a piece of the schedule that has a little bit of a softer underbelly. You have what's left of the Minnesota Twins, though that does include Joe Ryan tonight. Then you've got the Nationals, a team that has disappointed this year. Then you've got the White Sox, a team that's playing a lot better, but is still not a playoff contender. And then you've got a team in the Rangers on the back end of the upcoming homestand that you are directly chasing in the wild card picture. A team, by the way, that you swept at their place just a couple of months ago. So, you know, you can take the season series against them. You can improve your own wild card standing. That's going to be a pretty pivotal series. And then it's on the road against the Tigers and White Sox pretty much to round out the month of August. So, yeah, this is a really pivotal point of the schedule. But I think that the Royals are capable of making some noise and putting themselves on stronger footing heading into the final month of the season.
We've seen them try a lot of different stuff on offense. That includes letting some players go, calling some players up, and Jack Caglione, and so much more. Now they move Jonathan India down in the order, at least for a game. What would your expectation be on the permanence of that? Do you think it'll be more Grichuk, or is this just going to be matchup by matchup? India's got good numbers against somebody, he'll be at the top. If Grichuk or somebody else has good numbers, they'll be at the top.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I loved what Matt Quatrero said about it the other day when we were asking about moving Yaz into the leadoff spot. He had tremendous career numbers against Dustin May, and he made a really good point that when you're trying to get five left-handed bats into the lineup, that you need a little bit more of that balance. You know, the Royals had four lefties stacked at the bottom in Frazier, Rabe, Yastrzemski, Isbell, in some form or fashion that order. And, you know, that puts you in a position where later in the game, if they bring in a lefty, you've got to make a lot of moves off the bench in quick succession, or you're going to be on the short end of that platoon matchup. So moving Yastrzemski into the leadoff spot further balanced the lineup in terms of handedness, but it also got a guy who's got great numbers against that night's starting pitcher, more looks at that starting pitcher, and look, it paid off. He singled his first time up, he had an automatic double his second time up, and then came around to score the Royals' first run of the game one pitch later. I think it's interesting, too, looking at through the lens of Jonathan India. If you look at his season splits this year, he's actually been way better with runners on base and runners in scoring position than he's been with the bases empty. Now, does that mean that he can't hit leadoff or that he shouldn't hit leadoff? No, not necessarily, because you really only technically hit leadoff once in the game. After that, it's kind of variable depending upon what happens with the rest of the lineup. You know, India might hit third in an inning after Rave and Isbell, something like that. But I do think that it was an interesting switch that I think balanced the lineup, and I also think lengthened the lineup a good amount too. And I wonder if that's something we're going to see more of, especially against right-handed pitching. I think against left-handed pitching, you probably see India back at the top. But against right-handed pitching, I wonder if we see more of Yastrzemski at the top.
Jake, so much of the focus has been about the offense all year. We all know it. We've all talked about it. The other thing has been base running, and it's come back up again a few times this week. What have you heard, at least from the team and talking to Q and others, just what the biggest reason has been for some of the mistakes? I mean, some of these are mistakes that, frankly, shouldn't be happening at the big league level.
Yeah, I wish that I had a good answer. I don't. I think that through our lens as broadcasters and media members and by extension fans, I think that when these pickoffs are happening, they seem to be happening in moments that are magnified as opposed to moments that, you know, maybe it doesn't matter as much in that moment, mm-hmm. but it seems to be happening, you know, in a pivotal spot. And I think that's why it gets more magnified. And look, you know, the thing with Frazier yesterday, technically it's not a pickoff statistically it's a caught stealing because he was thrown out at second base. But if you want to think about it as a pickoff, that would give the Royals 16 this year. That's the most in baseball. And then you think, man, like the base running this year has been kind of all over the place. And I was actually surprised to like dig into this and realize this, but in terms of the sheer number of outs that the Royals have made on the bases, they're actually bottom third of the league in outs on the bases. So they've actually been a pretty good base running team, at least by that standard, when you take in the totality of what they've done on the bases. But the pickoffs, yeah, that is a glaring weakness that the Royals have had this season for one reason or another. I will point out, and I'm not just blowing smoke or looking through Royals colored glasses here, you know, as tough as that pickoff was with Frazier on Wednesday, there were two other base running plays in that actual same inning that I thought were really smart and really important. And it was Jonathan India getting to third base and then John Rave following to second base on the throw during that single that Rave had, you know, where he sends one into the right center field gap. Duran comes in. He's got to shift his body. His throw to third's offline. Putting those two guys into scoring position forced the Red Sox to bring the infield in. Izzy muscles one literally right behind the second base bag. If the infield's back, as it would have been if it was first and second, then Izzy's out and who knows what happens. But because the infield's in, well, that creates an opportunity for the Royals to get some runs. And we've seen that a couple of times now where the Royals have put themselves in a position to force the other team to bring the infield in, and that's created an opportunity. It happened later in the game, too, when Tyler Tolbert stole a couple of bases, and then Vinny Pasquantino shot one through a drawn-in infield to bring in another run. So as poor as the base running has been in the pickoff situations, I do think it's gone maybe a little bit understated that it has been better than maybe we realize when it comes to strictly running the bases.
Obviously, one start should not make any determination about where they are. What were your initial impressions of Falter and Burgert? Obviously, one guy pitched really well statistically and the other did not, but like just overall, yeah, getting those guys in, what'd you kind of think about the couple of first chances at the starting pitching we've gotten?
Yeah, I mean, I'll start with Bailey Falter. I've actually seen Bailey pitch for a long time, going back to his days in the Eastern League with Double-A Reading, and, you know, now in the big leagues for a couple of years, too. I'll be honest, and I'm not making any excuses for Bailey, but the Red Sox in particular are a pretty tough matchup for a lefty that doesn't get a lot of swing and miss, which is what Bailey Falter has been this year. He's been a lefty that's had success but doesn't get a lot of swing and miss, and the Red Sox have crushed left-handed pitching. You know, they've got a couple of guys that have pretty extreme platoon splits in Romy Gonzalez and Rob Refsnyder. So, you know, not the best matchup. At the same time, like, yeah, you want, you know, to pitch well. And I think that outside of the first inning, I thought Bailey Falter was fine. And I think he will continue to get better. I pointed this out on the air, too. But, you know, we've seen over the last couple of years that this Royals pitching group, they've developed a track record of taking a lefty from either in the organization or outside the organization and turning that lefty into an all-star. We saw it with Cole Reagans a couple of years ago, added a slider, bang, he's a Cy Young candidate. We saw it with Noah Cameron this year, added a slider in spring training, bam, he's a Rookie of the Year candidate. We saw it with Bubich in 2023, added a slider, looked great, had Tommy John, came back, boom, he's an all-star this year. So I do wonder what Bailey Falter looks like 2-3 starts from now when he's had a chance to really sink his teeth in with Brian Sweeney and the rest of the pitching group. As for Ryan Burgert, that was really impressive. I mean, he's still a rookie. The poise was there, kind of similarly to Noah Cameron, I think you'll agree. And I especially thought that the sweeper-slider combo, the two different sliders, kind of similar to Chris Bubich in a way, those two pitches played really well off one another, and he was inducing a bunch of weak contact. He was getting swing and miss. That fastball was running up to 95. That was an impressive debut for a guy that the Royals are going to have for years to come.
Jake Eisenberg, we appreciate it, man. Enjoy the trip to Minnesota, and then we'll see you back in KC next week.
All right, sounds good, guys. Thanks so much.
There you go. That's Jake Eisenberg. You'll hear him throughout the weekend. Obviously, you'll see him on TV as well, but you'll hear him here on 96.5 The Fan. A reminder, tonight's game, of course, is on 96.5 The Fan. Tomorrow, due to the Chiefs preseason game on 96.5 The Fan, the Royals game tomorrow afternoon will be over on The Fan AM. So just a heads up for those of you looking for both Royals and Chiefs. Obviously, your home for KC Sports is right here on 96.5 The Fan and also over on The Fan AM.
Get a little bit of both. Again,
absolutely.
Yeah, that's why we're the home for Kansas City sports. You get us one way or the other. And, yeah, it's important to note, only on 96.5 The Fan. That's where you'll catch every Chiefs game, obviously every Royals game as well. Looking forward to hearing from you guys this weekend. Thanks to Jake, who does. That's his thing.
Coffee
when he
shops,
goes out of town.
Man.
What do you like? What's something you do when you go out of town? Is there something you – I almost always on a vacation end up at a museum.
Ooh,
that's
okay.
That's pretty common for me. I almost always visit a museum on vacation. So, like, that's a pretty regular coffee shop. Local coffee shop's not uncommon for me either, but museums.
For me, I like to look up what basically, like, if someone said come to Kansas City, you would say, all right, what's the best barbecue restaurant? So I like to, if I'm going out of town, I like to look up what is considered by the locals to be one of the best restaurants in town. I'm not saying, like, fancy. Like, I'm talking about just one of the best restaurants. We all would have, like, if you had a buddy coming in town, You would tell whatever your favorite barbecue restaurant
is. I like going to like the
town,
food
right?
of choice. Like if we're in Miami, I want Cuban food or I want seafood.
Sure.
If I want
whatever is considered like the best restaurant in that city, I like to try to find a way to go to that. That's usually something I'll look up, one of the first things I do. And then not as much recently. I used to say, I want to look up a brewery. I'm not in that world as much as I was maybe like 5 years ago, I guess. But man. It depends on where you're going. Like you said, like when we were in California, I looked up wineries. I wanted to go to a winery, and I went to a tasting room because that's what I wanted to do.
Makes sense. It makes a lot of sense. Don't forget, we're out at Hollywood Casino right now. If you want to come visit us, you don't even have to go out of town. You can just come out to Hollywood Casino with your chance to win $100 in pin cash every hour thanks to Hollywood Casino. They'll be choosing a winner every single hour we are here. All you got to do is come up and register. Make sure you're good to go. You can also register for Charles and Minnie Hughes signed football and Chiefs Colts tickets while you're here as well. Plus, say what's up to us in break.
Yeah, during the break, should I use? So I have a ticket of like $14. Okay, because we pulled out.
What'd you buy
cash.
In for?
$20. Okay.
$20.
I was playing.
So you're down $5.
I was playing
$5.50.
The electronic crapless craps over there. Okay.
Okay.
During the break, I'm gonna go put this ticket in. And I'm going to play it until the break's over, and we'll see where we're at. Either it's all gone, or we'll see if we've made up a few bucks.
But you're playing through the break. Even if you get up to, like, $100, you're continuing to play until the break's over?
Until the break. Once you tell me we're back,
okay.
Then or I'll set a stopwatch, then I will come back and wherever we're at. And then I'll have, you know.
Probably get, like, a solid 5 minutes, I'm guessing.
We'll see. I mean, that 14, that could be gone very quickly. We'll
it
see.
Could be, but you were.
So I'll do that.
Okay, $14. We're going to see what happens with Alex on the other end. You can come out and have fun with us again at Hollywood Casino. We'll be here until 2. The drive will be here until 6. That $100 in pin cash will go all the way until 6 as we're live out here at Hollywood Casino. Last night, preseason football. This is, I'll tell you, before we talk about Anthony Richardson, the thing I kind of love about preseason football is you have to decide which camp you're going to be in, and you better decide early. You can be that this is mostly meaningless, and it's like 99% meaningless, and I'll take the little snippets of how an individual player does in an individual spot and just like pick and choose those. And really, when I mean individual players, I am not even talking about starters. Like the guys who are roster 30 through 70, it matters more for them, and pick these little spots of where, like, ooh, I saw improvement out of guard play from Kingsley. Let's say, for instance,
or the running back for Seattle, George Helani is like their number two or three back. He looked really good last night. That's a positive,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but if you take this as stats from starters, maybe, like, as in, if you watched last night and Drew's like, we back. Here comes Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Burrow. Unstoppable.
I wanted Drew's thoughts before. Drew, don't lead him into it. I just wanted his thoughts last night on the Bengals.
Is that your takes on the Bengals offense?
Oh, I mean, the take is Joe Burrow looked really good. The offense looked good. That was about it. I mean, they have a lot of work to do, as Zach Taylor said after the game.
So I'll say, I'm blown away by how impressive Joe Burrow.
I'm not blown away at all. It's a preseason game.
Because
he
if somebody
the way
says
he's supposed
that,
to.
That's right.
Because
that's exactly right.
If the stance is, that's why I like preseason games. If the stance is, I'm blown away by their performance, then you should be like, you should be on watch over the defense because Tanner McKee lit him up, and you have to be feeling horrifyingly
And the offense was going up against the twos, the offense for the Bengals.
Yeah, hence the reason why they played the way they played. Yes.
So, yeah, I don't think you really take a whole lot away from the results. It is individual player performances. If there's a rookie that's their third string back that you're excited about, the same way tomorrow night, I think for a lot of us, nobody really cares if they win. Does Breshard Smith look good? Uh-huh. Does Jalen Royals look good? That's the kind of stuff.
They pick up a good pass block situation if you're, you know?
Yeah.
Breshard Smith, that kind of thing. And then Anthony Richardson got hurt. Right after I told you, I was kind of feeling kind of good about his offseason.
Mahomes could go 5 for 5 for 60 yards and a touchdown. He could go 1 for 5 with a pick. I don't care. Like, it just doesn't matter.
And you should. And you should.
You know, it just doesn't matter either way.
You should. I mean, that's just not – none of those things inevitably matter in the end. I did see it was good news for Anthony Richardson. They called it day-to-day with that dislocated pinky.
He got nailed. He didn't even see the sack coming. That's on him, though.
Bad part about him was he did not adjust coverage to
– Or protection.
For
protection.
To help
himself. He was looking
there.
In the wrong direction.
Had no clue that guy was coming. He's lucky all he did was dislocate a pinky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he left after one drive or whatever. Then Daniel Jones came in with whatever. But you know, it's the same thing with Anthony Richardson. Man, he can't. Like, I understand this is a minor injury, but still, guy just always has something. I just don't believe in him one bit. Not at all. I said it yesterday before.
Has your opinion changed at all, Cody, in the last 24 hours?
I gotta say,
Anthony Richardson.
I did not bother. Somebody put down a 3-play breakdown of him, the good and the bad, and I'm like, I can't do this. I can't care enough about a preseason game to be like, he made a good read here. Because, like, inevitably, one of the biggest mistakes he made was he couldn't handle protection and got himself almost killed on a football field.
Yeah. But his career story is about not staying healthy and also him taking himself out of a game. And then last night, he got hurt again. Like, that's why
he couldn't stay in a game for a different reason, but he couldn't stay in a game. No, but I don't feel any better. Like, my opinion didn't really change based on the 3 throws he made in a preseason game. I still think that he could be better than he was last year. My thing is, I don't understand why anybody's like, Daniel Jones is definitely better than him. I'm like, I don't know about that. If Anthony Richardson was just healthy, he probably just is Daniel Jones, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's because probably, Daniel Jones, the 1 year Daniel Jones had was very good. It's still better than anything we've seen from Anthony Richardson. That's probably why.
Yeah, but I like, you know, I guess I haven't, I need... I don't know. I need
a lot of it is still last year, man, and I'm in this camp, and I know a lot of people are, like, last year, when not only were you coming off of an injury, but when you take yourself as a starting quarterback out of a game in the middle of the drive because you're tired, that is something that's something you can't just ignore and forget happened. And there's guys in that locker room that didn't either. And so, another reason why the organization brought in Daniel Jones, because they're worried about Anthony Richardson. You don't bring in Daniel Jones, as bad as he's been, if you're not worried about Anthony Richardson's availability and also where he's at as a quarterback. They knew when they drafted him he was a project, too. That's the other thing. Nobody ever, like, when Anthony Richardson got drafted, it wasn't like, oh my gosh, this guy's going to be a stud. It's like, he's got unbelievable athleticism, but he's raw, so let's see what happens. And I haven't seen any development from Anthony Richardson.
Easily the funniest developing storyline in preseason is that people think Joe Milton should be a starting NFL quarterback.
If that man had accuracy, I bet you he'd be a top 20 quarterback, but he has no accuracy. I mean, that man throws the ball far, and that's about it.
I saw that video of him at training camp.
That's what he does.
This week throwing a 75-yard touchdown on a dime.
That's what he
in
does.
In the air. It was in the air, 75 yards.
He might have the strongest arm in the league.
Yeah, probably. But what do I care?
Well, exactly. He's a third stringer. How about if you're locked into preseason, you probably would freak out that Ashton Jeanty he didn't even have a positive yard.
Three carries, negative a yard.
For negative one. Again,
you can't
freak out about that stuff, though.
But no.
That game ended up in a tie, too, I guess. I didn't stay up to
did
watch
it really?
That one. 23,
did it really?
I saw on the ticker, 23-23, Jalen Miller played
no
the entire
overtime.
Second half.
No overtime in preseason.
Lame.
We don't need that.
No, not overtime. Some cool contest to decide a winner. lame, no ties. It should be the quarterbacks throwing it. It should be the quarterbacks doing the thing that they do in like preseason or a training camp for the Chiefs, like having
no,
to first person
to
hit the crossbar.
Nobody wants to waste their time.
That's what Jameis did yesterday, by the way. I don't know if you saw that video. Jameis Winston hit on the first throw.
I did not. No, but you don't need any overtime or any gimmicky thing. It's preseason. Just end the game. We don't need to waste anybody's time. Everybody get the hell out of there. Get on a flight. Get back to training camp.
I'll tell you right now, you're already wasting my time if I'm watching fourth quarter preseason. Then end it after a half. Don't even make me. You're already wasting my time if I'm watching.
It's not for the fans. I'm talking about for the team. They don't want anybody getting hurt. Or like they already did their evaluation. Nobody's evaluating somebody because they hit a crossbar with a football. Oh, well, he should be our backup now because he hit
a
crossbar.
It's a breakdancing competition. Like, give me something. Choose a winner. It's already a meaningless game. Give me something.
That actually is how the Browns and Giants should determine the quarterback battles for their teams. The first quarterback to hit the crossbar will be the starter in week one.
Honestly, I'm not totally sure that that's not what the Browns are doing. We'll talk Shadur later because I'm kind of interested to see what he does tonight. And I still don't think they're putting him in a bad spot. But this is preseason football. The only thing it serves as a fan is you get a little taste. You get a little nugget. It reminds you that football is around the corner. But, Gold, you know, by the middle of the second quarter of the game for the Chiefs on Saturday, you are not going to be enjoying watching it anymore. Not like for a regular base. You're going to be like, oh, he's a bunch of, you know, it's going to be All the rookies or second-year players, and C.J. Hansen's going to be in at center and all these other guys. And you'll be like, well, it's fine, I guess. It is football, and I will leave it on. But it's like outside of that, did any of you guys finish a preseason game
No.
last night?
No.
I told you. I was just going to be on casually in the background. That's about it.
And then by half, it was
and I definitely
something else was on
did not stay up for that Raiders game. I was asleep by about 10:15.
So you didn't even watch that first Genty carry, or you did?
The game started at 9.
Okay, yeah, so you watched that first
one. Yeah. By 10:10, I was out.
We talked about it maybe 2 months ago that the running backs coach didn't want him to do the Michael Myers stance anymore. Lamest
Come on,
helmet
Jim Kelly.
Sticker, lamest
Come on,
college
Jim Kelly.
helmet sticker nonsense ever, Drew. That's what that is. You got to earn your stripes at U.S. Get out of here. I'm an NFL player. You took me in the top 10 picks. I can stand up straight before I take the ball.
Agreed.
Like, coaching that out of him is the lamest thing to do. And he's like, well, I guess I got to earn. No, you don't have to earn it. You earned it by becoming the sixth overall pick. In the NFL, this isn't even baseball either. In the NFL, they take you in the top 10. You don't have to prove anything to anybody when you're a running back. You're a quarterback, maybe. Wide receiver, running back, you don't have to earn your stripes amongst the guys. You can just go out there and play. Like, that's how, you know, like, get out of here. It's like asking an offensive tackle to earn his spot or some nonsense. I just think it's like a college thing, Drew. Chip Kelly, I think it's a 100% college.
I mean, ironically,
it's a Buckeye, sticker.
I was going to say, ironically, he just came from Ohio State. But
forgot how it worked in the pros. Yeah,
apparently.
All right. Up next, let's talk some Chiefs football. Josh Briscoe, of course, the new pre and post game host on the Chiefs Radio Network, is going to join us. We'll talk a little bit about what we've seen at camp. Obviously, what he's expecting tomorrow night, right here on 96.5 The Fan.